Your guide to Merseyside sport. The Kickoff.
Radio City Talk.
Okay, it's been an incredible Australian Open for a variety of reasons, both in the men's and the women's draw. Let's catch up once again with Sky Sports' Barry Cowan. Morning to you, Barry.
Good morning, Steve. And thankfully, we can talk about tennis and not football.
Yeah, let's keep clear of the Reds. Let's just move away from them. Look, 2 weeks ago, I don't think when we caught up pre-Australian Open, I don't think we'd have been talking about what we're seeing now, especially with the top two seeds going out. I don't think anyone would have thought that both of them would go out in the men's.
No, I mean, it has been a big surprise. I think, firstly, how nice it has to see that they've changed the surface in terms of the speed. I think it's brought a different dynamic. I mean, obviously, there are certain players that favours Federer, certain players that you would feel, well, maybe is not as favourable for them. But I think we've seen a different type of tennis than we've seen in previous Australian Opens. And what a story, both in the men's and the women's. I mean, who would have thought at the start? I mean, I don't think there's anyone out there, not even that guy who bet that even Ivanovic was going to win Wimbledon back in 2001 could have predicted that you'd have Serena and Venus in the women's final and a real chance that you're going to have Federer and Nadal in the men's. It's extraordinary. But I think what we should, you know, we continue to cherish is what great champions, you know, both Nadal and Federer are with what they've had to go through the last year that they're playing as well as they are doing.
Well, their stories are remarkable, especially Rafa Nadal's. I mean, I think a lot of people had written him off. You would have expected to see him at this stage of, you know, what one of these Grand Slams again, maybe even himself. I don't know. But his story really is one that makes
you sit up. I think, Steve, what it is with Rafa, and I've actually always consistently defended him, that people 18 months ago when he was saying during the North American hardcore stretch in the spring was saying, oh, I'm lacking confidence, I don't feel this, I don't feel that. And people saying, why would you say that? You're letting your guard down. But Rafa's always been very true to himself. And at the end of last year, he said, I feel great. I've had a great preseason and I feel I'm going to have a good year. I guess there's no one better knows his body better than Rafa, and he's looked rejuvenated. I think really the difference for me with Rafa these 2 weeks is he playing any better than what he has done in the last 2 years? No, but what he has been able to do, and I don't know whether it's bringing Carlos Moore on the team who is helping coach him along with his uncle, and the fact that, you know, he grew up idolizing Carlos Moore, that's been a help. Or whether actually he's generally fit and stronger than he has been for a couple of years. But so far, he hasn't seemed to doubt himself on the big points. And as we know in this sport, so often it comes down to whether you can play the big points better. I mean, look at the stats last year with Murray. Murray was world number one, dominated the tour for the last 6 months. Only won 55% of his points throughout 2016. So you're not talking much of a difference of a swing of you know, winning a match and losing a match.
Is it great for tennis if this happens, Federer, Nadal? It would be the 35th meeting between the pair if it came off.
Yes and no. I was asked the question a couple of days ago, well, what does that say to the others when you've got a 35-year-old who hasn't played for 6 months and you've got, you know, Nadal who certainly in recent years has struggled to progress latter stages of majors. Especially on quick courts. But for me, there's two crucial factors. The first one I touched on about 5 minutes ago. These are great champions. These are two players who, in Roger and Rafa, who in 50 years' time, people will still be saying, I remember when Federer and Nadal played. They were one of the game's greats. And I think the next generation, the players are 25, 26 years of age, have missed the boat. And Federer was asked that couple of years ago, actually, well, why are you still playing so great? He said, well, I feel good, and the next crop of players aren't as good. And I think that they've tried to beat the likes of Federer, Nadal, Djokovic, Murray at their own game. And that's why someone like a Wawrinka, who's pushing Federer early stages, it's great tennis at opening 10 games, he plays a different style of tennis. You know, he has the power that he can unsettle the really best guys, where when you throw in the likes of, you know, Songa, Burdick, Nishikori, those types of players who are exceptional and very good, and their consistency has been second to none, but they don't worry the very best. And that's why when it comes down to the crunch, you've got the Federers and Nadals coming through, and that's why I think the Federer, I've gone for Federer just. But I absolutely can't see any way, and you'll probably remind me in a couple of days' time, but I can't see any way that Rafa's going to lose to Dimitrov. I think everything is stacked in Nadal's favour to win that one.
I think so. And I think if you do get a final between Federer and Rafa, the interesting thing is they're both massive fan favourites. Normally you can tell with a final who the weight of public sort of opinion is for, but those two would make something in which everyone loves the pair of them.
Yeah.
It's a bit mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you put Andy Murray's demise to Zverev down to? This is a guy who Roger Federer literally just sort of crumbled with his fingertips in the next round.
Understandable. My worst fear was at the end of last year that this is what would happen, to be honest, Steve. And you know, I'm not just saying it in hindsight. I said it on record at the end of last year when I did something for Sky, that he had 6 months of incredible tennis. It was an incredible year, incredible highs. Anyone that saw his performances at the 0-2, three matches, you know, having to dig deep in two of them over 3 hours, and then the Djokovic final, that he was bound to have a period where it would be emotionally tough to get himself at that top level again. You know, and we're talking 1-2%. We're not talking 25%. We're not all of a sudden saying he's lost his appetite for his game, but he just didn't have the same sparkle. Now, is it something to worry about long term? Absolutely not. I just think the Australian came around so quickly. You know, it's only a couple of weeks. It's Christmas, and they started the tournament. And obviously, yes, I was massively shocked that he lost to Zverev. But I didn't realistically think, you know, deep down when I took everything into consideration, that Andy would be my favorite. That's why I went for Djokovic. You know, that was one of the reasons why I thought coming into it, Djokovic looked a lot fresher. But the court surface, which we never really know until the start of the tournament, has been a massive factor in that. And that's why, you know, you certainly look on the women's. That's why Serena's just totally breezed through the draw, because she's been able to hit off her opponents.
If you look back at the Australian Open next week, and you're British, you'll reflect on Dan Evans and Johanna Konta, though, won't you? That's what the story will have been about. So just separately between the two of them, Johanna Konta, is she a future winner of a major?
I think so, yeah. I think that she's a little unfortunate with the draw, but that happens, that she had to play Serena in the quarterfinals. I think that if she actually played her in the final, I think she would have stood more chance. Because Serena has shown that she's very vulnerable in the very latter stages of a slam, because she's, you know, edging closer to this record. She is on 22 at the moment, currently tied with Steffi Graf, open era record. She's trying to overtake Steffi and then equal and surpass Margaret Court on 24. But she has shown that she can wobble in the finals. So Konta's last 3 weeks has been brilliant. I mean, she's firmly established herself as a top 10 player, and I do. I don't see any reason why Wimbledon is no good bet. I was looking last week. She was 40-1 to win Wimbledon. I would have thought that's
worth jumping on, isn't it?
That's a pretty good each-way bet, I would have thought.
And Dan Evans, he's a scrapper, isn't he? He's one of those. He'll give 120%.
Yeah, and he was able, like Konta, to build on what he was able to do in Sydney. And that, I think, is as encouraging as the couple of great wins that he's had, that it's not just 1 week. You know, it's not 1 week in every 6 months. It's one good week and then back it up the next week. When, at times, physically, he was hurting, but he showed great spirit, great determination, which hasn't always been Evans's forte early in his career. Two big wins. The Chilic win was superb, and obviously he came up a little bit short against Songa. But you know, he's a player now that's well inside the top 50. He's going to get into all the main events, and you know, if he can continue to play the brand of tennis again, he plays a different way. He comes forward. I think we touched on that last week. It's nice to see that there are players out there that can volley, that are willing to do something different than where the tour, as good as it's been for 10 years or so, at times it has become a little samey. And, you know, I mentioned Songa and Berg. I still can't understand why these guys are 6'3", 6'4". They never come in. Trying to beat players who are quicker than them from the back and probably stronger from... Which, you know, it always perplexes me.
And they don't have a go at it. Barry, I'll leave you to enjoy what looks like heading into a tiebreak in the first set between Wawrinka and Federer.
And maybe the crucial tiebreak. You never know the way that match is going to pan out. Wawrinka's an enigma, isn't he?
Oh, I think they're both great to watch. Really enjoy.
When he's hot, there's arguably no one better to watch. And when he's cold...
He's very cold.
You're left scratching your head of how he keeps missing. He can miss any shot.
Steve Hothersall's kickoff.
This is Radio City Talk.